Hi, welcome to the new Trust Show. I'm Tom Aylott, Deputy Editor of Investment Trust Insider. Today we're joined by Jonathan Simpson-Dent, Chair of Edinburgh Worldwide. It's currently facing its second requisition vote by Saba Capital in an attempt to remove its board. It faced a similar vote this time last year, which was overwhelmingly voted against, but they've come back for a second vote. So shall we start off with Saba's main grievances, which comes down to performance? That's what they often lead on with their criticisms. And they have a fair point when you look at the five-year returns. The share price is down about 40%, NAV is down 33%. Shareholders are holding on to a trust for 5 years, expect to have something to show for it, and it is quite a steep loss. How do you justify that?
Look, we don't try and justify it. The five-year performance is something that none of us like, none of the board likes. When I came into the role at the start of 2024 as chair, my brief was to get it fixed. This was a mandate that we firmly believe people loved. People really like the sweet spot of what Edinburgh Worldwide stands for. And we want to deliver strong performance for them. And that's why we did the work in 2024. And that's what we're seeing the fruits of the benefit of now.
Yeah, and you have started to see a bit of a turnaround in performance since then. I mean, since November 2024, when that strategy refresh did happen, the NAV's up 30%, share price 26%. So it's been quite a sharp rally. How much of that do you attribute to the changes you made, and how much is that has been an improving market environment?
Look, I think a large part of that has been about the changes. We did a lot of work in 2024, our soul-searching year. We looked at Baillie Gifford very hard to see whether they were fit for purpose in terms of, you know, delivering future benefit to shareholders. We looked at the executional strategy. We also looked at the mandate and said, is the mandate still relevant? And at that time, I was Mr. Unpopular in Baillie Gifford, I can tell you. We were putting them under a lot of scrutiny. We were looking at other providers in the market as well to see who else could do similar delivery of this particular mandate. We decided that they had this unique combination or in the listed and unlisted space, which not many managers have, that dual skill set. And so we wanted to give it a go. And we wanted to give it a go under a revised strategy, a tighter executional approach. So we made the changes. And that was all about rebalancing the portfolio, fewer holdings, so we could really drill down on the holdings that we did have, making sure our sectoral mix was more balanced, and also making sure that we were investing in the right types of business, because we'd become very sort of small cap. And what we were seeing in our opportunity space was that a lot of the really disruptive transformational businesses weren't necessarily sub $5 billion in market cap. So we increased the capitalization limit that we could invest in. So all of those, when you put all those into the round, we've seen the benefit of that in 2025. And the performance has been very strong versus the index. We've doubled the index, which we're really, really proud of. But it's only the start. We want to see that continue.
Yeah. It has been greatly in excess of both the benchmark and the peer group. Do you think that can continue at the same rate that it has over the past year since you made those changes?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if we didn't believe in the path for growth strategy, we'd be taking a very different approach to the future of Edinburgh Worldwide. We know people love this mandate. I'm going to keep coming back to that. The mandate is absolutely something that people want to see succeed. We've shown that it can succeed for a short period. Now we've got to show that it can deliver for a long period. But we've got huge belief in this portfolio. Our single largest holding is one of the most talked about companies in the world. But look at our top 10 holdings. They're all companies that are very, very exciting, on the cusp of truly transformative plays in their particular markets. So we believe that that can make a really exciting story for shareholders for the long term.
Mm, yeah. I mean, speaking of your top holding, SpaceX, that was another criticism from Saba over the last few weeks. The fact that you sold down your position quite a lot ahead of the re-rating of the value that saw it sort of double in its valuation. What was the reasoning for that? Because Boaz Weinstein seemed to insinuate that it was done more to prepare for the merger with Baillie Gifford US Growth rather than sort of actual profit taking, that it was kind of short-sighted. What was the real reasoning behind that?
This had nothing to do with the merger whatsoever. In fact, we were very careful as the board were discussing potential merger options to make sure that our manager was retained full focus on the portfolio and delivering their job, which is managing the portfolio and delivering performance for our shareholders. So the two are entirely separate. with an unlisted holding like SpaceX, you know, quite often it can take a long time to actually engage in a sell down, a trim of a position like SpaceX. It's not like trading a public stock that you can just trade in and out of in the next hour. So there's quite a long run into that. So the trying to link that timing to discussions of a merger are just not correct. So no, this was all about portfolio discipline, concentration risk in the portfolio, all the learnings that we'd taken on board when we did our homework in 2024 in terms of what was going to get the trust performing better. So when we put all that together, we put together investment frameworks that we agreed with Baillie Gifford, and we expect them to manage within those frameworks. And they've done a nice job with that. The other point that is missed, which I think is really important, is SpaceX is still our largest holding by some way. It's 16% of the portfolio. In fact, I don't believe there are any other trusts with as larger exposure to SpaceX as Edinburgh Worldwide. We got in there in 2018, right at the beginning of this journey with SpaceX, and we've delivered an almost 1,000% return for shareholders. So shareholders have hugely benefited from our holding in SpaceX over the last 7 years. And I believe they will continue to benefit from that shareholding at 16% of the portfolio for the future.
I suppose it was just slightly coincidental that it was Edinburgh Worldwide and Baillie Gifford US Growth that reduced their holdings at the same time. Because you could say the same about Scottish Mortgage. That's also a very high top position in that trust as well, but they didn't trim the position ahead of the tender.
Look, what Baillie Gifford USA does is entirely their matter. Chinese walls exist within Baillie Gifford, so we have no idea what their thinking is, and nor should we. And I can say pretty certainly that the same would hold the other way, so they'd have no view on what Edinburgh Worldwide is up to and taking decisions. The other thing that people may not understand with unlisted holdings is it's not like a public market commodity. You know, it's not like Nvidia or something that you can just go and trade, you know, in the next hour if I wanted to. An unlisted holding, yeah, firstly, you're beholden to a shareholder agreement with the counterparty, with the investee company. Secondly, you have to be very careful about how you sell, when you sell. You can't just sell at any particular time, and and quite often there's a multi-month run-in to a particular transaction, usually linked to an employee tender or some liquidity event within that particular company. So we're playing to those liquidity events, and often with quite a long lead time. So to try and then sort of link this to a short-term question around a merger is totally wrong. It has nothing to do with the merger whatsoever.
Yeah. Speaking to the managers, were they aware that liquidity event was going to happen in December? Why didn't they wait until that moment for the valuation change?
There are liquidity events happening all the time. And look, there's been three or so of them in the last 12 months. So they're happening all the time. And by the way, the latest liquidity event is way off what the market rumors are of an IPO at $1.5 trillion. So there's market noise, and there are a steady stream of liquidity events happening in a large company like SpaceX that now is of that sort of scale that merits that sort of frequency.
With the merger, obviously that was rejected by Saba with their majority stake. They turned it down. Do you still stand by that being a good idea? Because some people are speculating that, you know, large cap US equities and global smallers just didn't mix together in one portfolio.
We wouldn't have put the merger forward to our shareholders if we didn't think that there was some merit in it, for starters. Look, yeah, part of the challenge here is we're in an industry where UK equities are under a lot of pressure. And also wealth managers ever increasingly focus on fewer larger investment trusts. So it was incumbent on us to take a look at mergers, at least as options. We spread the net far and wide to evaluate which merger options we thought made sense, because we wanted to make sure we absolutely stuck to the Edinburgh Worldwide sweet spot of technological disruptive businesses with a strong US focus. We're already pretty US focused as we are. Therefore, we could see a future whereby a Edinburgh Worldwide and a USA construct could potentially work. But before we took it any further, before we committed any costs to this, we really wanted to sound out shareholders to see where they stood. And Saba said no straight away. But as I've had a chance to talk more broadly to shareholders, people get really, really excited about Edinburgh Worldwide and Edinburgh Worldwide continuing to focus on the sweet spot that we focus on today, our current investment mandate and our strategy. So as far as we're concerned, the merger discussions are parked. And all eyes are on us executing this strategy now, continuing to deliver the path for growth story that we've delivered nicely in 2025, delivering that in 26 and 27.
Yeah. Did Saba express any interest in a merger whatsoever? Because Boaz Weinstein again said afterwards that part of the reason was because the tender offer was only 40% and that it included a standstill agreement. Was that sort of one of the reasons why they were against the merger idea?
We didn't get into specifics. I tried to talk to him directly. They didn't want to talk to me, so we couldn't get into that level of specificity. Personally, I believe that they blocked the merger because they want control of Edinburgh Worldwide as a trust. He said previously that he wants his own vehicle in the UK. He wants AUM directly under Saba. And I believe that this is what this player is all about. So whilst he's seen, yeah, he's supported mergers in other instances, I think in this case, he sees that he wants to sort of grab Edinburgh Worldwide as his big play.
Mm. Are you still open to the idea of a merger with another trust outside of the Baillie Gifford stable that ticks those boxes for you?
We have to take this one step at a time. For now, this is all about what shareholders want today, and they're going to be voting on the 20th of January to tell us what they really want. I am expecting them to have a very similar view to what they had. Let's not forget it. This was just 10 and a half months ago in February, mid-February last year. I'm expecting them to have a very similar view to what they told us last year, which is they really, really like the mandate. They want to see it continue and they want to see it flourish and perform. So job number one for this board is to see the trust perform. So yes, we're delighted with 2025 performance. We want to see that continue in 26 and 27. As far as I'm concerned, nothing will distract from that. Should we always keep a weather eye on mergers and structural change going on within our particular sector? We should absolutely do that. And where we think something could make sense in future, we will discuss it in a very methodical way, and we will put it to shareholders to sound out their appetite for it. At the moment, merger discussions are entirely parked. This is about now seeing what shareholders really want to happen next and focusing everything on performance.
But like you say, sort of the first step will be to go past the vote first. At the vote last year, those proposals were overwhelmingly voted against. Do you think it will be more difficult this time to reject those proposals?
So there's one big difference. In fact, there are two big differences this time around. The first difference is that Saba now has a larger stake. So last year they were under 25%. Now they're over 30%. So we've just got a bigger hill to climb to get enough shareholders out to vote and to make sure that they, they've got the information at their fingertips to be able to vote. Assuming we are as successful at mobilizing the vote as we were last year, we will be okay, but it's going to be tight. So mobilizing the vote is really, really critical for us, both this week and next. What I can say from everything that I've heard so far is that the appetite to adopt a different future with Saba is very, very limited amongst the shareholder base. And look, when they voted in February 2025, that was off the back of a year of pretty average performance and all our detailed work to put the path to growth strategy to work. We've now seen the strategy working. So the other second big difference, first one being his larger holding. The second big difference is actually that we've got a trust that has performed really strongly in the last year. So when Saba says the board has not done its job in the last year, and then quotes historic data and doesn't even reference what's happened in the last year, that to me is a problem, because in the last year, the trust performed really strongly. So we've got a bigger hill to climb in terms of the number of votes required. But we've got a year of excellent performance and belief in the future and continuing that excellent performance as Edinburgh Worldwide. Would hope that shareholders would give us credit for that.
Mm, yeah. Say the vote does go in your favour again for a second time. What is the long-term plan with Saba? Because they're still the largest shareholder on the register, around 30%. What's to stop them from coming back and trying the same again in a year's time?
Well, look, first part of the long-term plan is the board will continue its very strong focus on the path to growth strategy. It's this is about, you know, turning a very strong year in 2025 into continued performance in 2026 and beyond. So big focus on delivering that strategy, driving performance for our shareholders. As far as SAB is concerned, I would hope that they will listen carefully to what shareholders say on the 20th of January. So in February last year, 98.5% of them said they did not want what SABA had to offer. That's 98.5% of shareholders who turned out to vote that weren't SABA, i.e. the non-SABA shareholding. If we have a similar result this time round, well, we've got a very, very strong message coming from the non-SABA shareholders who choose to vote, then we hope that SABA will listen carefully to that, because that will be twice that they'll have been told that actually people like Edinburgh Worldwide and they want Edinburgh Worldwide to continue and they don't want the alternative future that he's offering. At that time, we will sit down with SABA as our largest shareholder and all shareholders and just be absolutely categorical about what they really want for the future. And I would hope that the conversation with SABA will be much more constructive once they've heard that message twice in terms of developing options. We've already taken to them sort of capital return options that would allow them to get out. We've taken them that to them twice in 2025. So we will be taking options to them that we think are presentable to all our shareholders, that treat all our shareholders fairly, that give them sort of good options for them to hit their short-term objectives.
You've mentioned in some of your responses that one of the key reasons to vote against these proposals is because SABA hasn't presented an alternative. They want to add their sort of new directors, but there isn't a plan for what to do differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, Boaz Weinstein did respond to that, saying that it's because they're independent and SABA won't have anything to do with what they choose to do. What makes you think that the new directors they put forward aren't independent of SABA?
Look, there's a couple of things here that I think are important for shareholders to understand, and actually that shareholders deserve. Firstly, if an entire board is removed and a new board proposed by a minority shareholder, I think the other shareholders, the majority of shareholders, have the right to know that they've been through some sort of independent scrutinization, some sort of assessment like you'd have with a nominations committee, for example. So as far as I'm aware, they haven't been through any independent scrutiny in terms of being put forward for as a new board. Secondly, we know that none of them have got either direct investment trust exposure or experience or UK board and PLC experience. So they're coming into an environment that they don't have direct experience of, which is actually quite a regulated and sort of structured environment. And that experience does matter. On the independence point, I'll just say two things. Firstly, we know that one of the candidates was put forward about 14 months ago for Herald, and therefore we believe there's some sort of ongoing relationship there. Whether it's an independent relationship or not, we don't know. But secondly, it's really important that the board retains independence from shareholders and from the manager. And I was concerned by Mr. Weinstein's recent post on X, where he said this board absolutely and categorically will be fully independent. And by the way, we will be holding on to SpaceX. I will hold on to SpaceX. Because to me, that is a conflict in story. He should not be calling the shots on the portfolio or specific investment decisions, which should be the manager as scrutinized by the board. So I think there's a direct conflict there.
Another criticism of SABA in recent weeks has been against you personally. They've kind of brought up your past history on the board of HomeServe. During your tenure, it was fined $30 million, the largest against a retail company in its history. That's obviously going to raise some red flags. Are shareholders right to be quite concerned about that?
As far as I'm concerned, shareholders should absolutely not be concerned about this. This feels like game playing to me, as some tactics, and it's deliberately done to discredit me personally and individually, which I think is very discomforting. Was there a breach of the listing rules and our disclosure requirements on my appointment? Absolutely not. It was, anyone who's done their homework will know that we fully disclosed what we were supposed to disclose when I was appointed. I'm very proud to have been part of HomeServe. It's had a great journey over the last 30 years, and I'm proud to be a small part of it. And I'm delighted that the CEO has been recognized in the latest honors list of this new year. Look, just for the record, as the FCA have never come after me personally. I've never been involved in one of their investigations. I've never been named by them. I've never been fined by them. The investigation happened after my time at HomeServe. I think it is a deliberate attempt to discredit myself personally and more broadly the board.
Mm, yeah. Although the sort of fine was issued in 2014 after you'd left, the period what it was looking at is whilst you were there, that was between sort of 2007 to 2009. What exactly did happen there? Because in the FCA report, it does say that the board was insufficiently engaged with compliance matters. That was sort of one of the allegations that was made against the company. So what was your involvement in that investigation?
The involvement in the investigation, I had no involvement in the investigation whatsoever. It covered a long period of time. The time was around about a decade that it covered. The allegation was mis-selling of insurance products within one of our divisions at HomeServe, and I was not actively involved in the day-to-day management of that division.
Mm. One sort of extra thing that Saba has mentioned consistently as well is buybacks. They've said that it's not been enough. Do you think that the amount of buybacks you have spent over the past year or so has been enough relative to your peer group?
Yeah, we'd be up there as one of the higher, more intense buyback trusts. So yeah, it would absolutely be up there. We've bought around about 6% of the company back in the last 12 months. So yes, we've been buying back in quite a consistent and heightened way. Last November, we also said that we were looking at a capital return at scale as well. So this isn't just about the buybacks. We announced that we would return up to 130 million of capital to shareholders in the near term. We've gone back with two proposals on that to Saba, and they've rejected both proposals. So to tell us that we're not returning capital at enough speed, to tell us that we are underweight in terms of our buyback program, both of those things, in my view, are not correct.
Mm, yeah. What other plans have you put forward to Saba since the last vote? Have you had much communication with them?
We've had a couple of interactions. I've had a couple of interactions with them directly earlier on in the year. Like I said, we took two capital return proposals to them during 2025. So and both of those they said no to. You already know about the merger proposal as well. More latterly, in the last quarter of 2025, it's been very difficult to speak to them directly. They've only wanted to speak via our broker. And even though I have offered to go and speak to them directly in New York, they haven't wanted to do that. So that's been disappointing because I always think these things are easier if you can deal principal to principal. But in this case, they've wanted to go through the broker. So we've had periodic updates during 2025, as you'd expect us to do with all our shareholders, just to tell them what's going on. But in terms of meaningful conversation about what they really want to happen next, we have not been able to engage in that discussion with them.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Jonathan. And if people would like to continue following this story, we're writing about it on all the time on Investment Trust Insider. And we'll have plenty more episodes of this new podcast coming up over the next few weeks. So remember to keep an eye out.
Tom, I really appreciate CityWire having me on today. I think it's been a good conversation. I've enjoyed our conversation. In particular, I just want to make sure that shareholders speak up. And I think your voice can be helpful in that, insofar as just reminding people that the vote's coming up. And I just really want people to speak up and have their say. So thank you for giving me the chance to talk to you today.